Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at ritaschulte.com. That's S-C-H-U-L-T-E.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart. Dr. Joshua Straub is a speaker, author, counselor, and professor. He's the co-author of God Attachment, Why You Believe, Act, and Feel the Way You Do About God, and the Quick Reference Guide to Counseling Teenagers. Dr. Straub has served as executive pastor at Woodland Hills Church and was on the executive staff of the American Association of Christian Counselors. He's a friend and colleague, and I'm excited to have him back on the show today to talk about his current passion, the mind of the millennial generation. Dr. Straub, welcome to Heartline.
Thank you very much. It's great to be on.
Explain how the topic, a love for building relational health in the next generation, became a passion for you.
Well, there's a couple different stories in that regard, but from a very real perspective, I have a 6.5-month-old at home, and just parenting, you know, the way that my wife and I decided to parent was thinking beyond not just my generation, but also to the third and the fourth generation. And so parenting with our grandchildren in mind. And so in doing so, I realize that my son and my grandchildren are going to grow up surrounded by people who are of the next generation. And I think from a micro perspective, from a community-based perspective, it's very important for me to be able to pour into the next generation locally with those around me, to be able to build a support system. As Moses said in Deuteronomy, "Hear, O Israel," you know, he was talking to the entire community, entire Israel, to come around the next generation to leave a legacy. And so from a micro perspective in the local community, people that I surround my children with are so important, but then also from a macro perspective, from the political, economic, you know, perspective, it burdens my heart to see a generation growing up with such relational brokenness in a lot of ways, which my passion for relational health comes from my own. When I was 12 years old, my parents divorced. And so there's a seed of divorce that has plagued the generations, every person in my family, grandparents, aunts and uncles, my parents, everybody's been divorced at least once, many of them more than once. And that has really defined who I am on a relational perspective and why I parent with my grandchildren and great-grandchildren in mind, because I see this relational brokenness, and I've been able to, through the Lord, overcome a lot of relational adversity because of that. And I want to be able to pour that into the next generation so that it really just builds, not just within my own family, but within families really across the world. So,
wow. Yeah, I've heard statistics say that boys, especially boys around that age, 12 years old, take divorce harder even than girls do, which was really surprising for me. And, you know, Josh, I have so many teens I'm counseling right now, and I think the saddest thing for me is that there are these precious kids in the best part of their life, beautiful girls, and they're cutting themselves and starving themselves and hating themselves, feeling like they don't fit in, and they seem hopeless at times. And so you're absolutely right. There's so much brokenness. What do you think is going on here?
Well, I think, you know, and it started for me back even, I was a criminal justice major in college, and I really wanted to be a police officer.
Really?
And yeah, and so my bachelor's degree is in criminal justice. But what the Lord did is he strategically placed me in a juvenile detention center as a youth development counselor at 21 years old.
Mm.
And I started to see juvenile delinquents not as bad kids, but as hurting kids. And every juvenile delinquent that I can ever look back on and remember either had a broken or no relationship at all with their father. And in a lot of cases, didn't even know who their father was. And so I started to see these kids not as bad kids, but I started to see them as broken kids. And it really changed my heart, because what I started to see was, these kids are zealous. They're passionate and they're bold, but they're passionate and they're bold for the thing that most makes them feel better. And so, for instance, you have a broken generation who grew up in a lot of ways with divorced parents, and they're hurting, they're broken, and they're trying to figure out, or they're growing up without fathers, so their identity and who they are, their self-esteem, if you will, is not grounded in anything that their parents provided for them. It's grounded in either things of the world.
Yes.
Or it's grounded in other relationships and other people who have constantly let them down. And as a result, they're lonely. And so this brokenness ends up leading to the cutting. And cutting and self-injury really is, it's a pain reliever. It's like just taking Tylenol or something for a headache. It's a pain reliever to them, and it helps them relieve the pain. And so what we end up doing then is and it's just like all of us. This isn't just teenagers. This is all of us. We're driven by pain and pleasure. And so whenever we're hurting, we look for something to anesthetize that pain. And we'll turn to anything to try to calm and soothe that pain. And that's what our teenagers are doing. It's just that the things that they're turning to, in a lot of ways, don't make sense to us, because they're not the things that we've turned to in the past. Or we look at them and say, well, why would you do that? Why would you hurt yourself in those ways? And so I think that's where this gap is, if you will. They're hurting, but we don't know what to do about it, because we don't understand why they're hurting, and we don't also understand why they're trying to ease the pain in the way that they are.
You know, the other thing I notice is a huge drive for perfectionism in these adolescents. And I see parents maybe contributing to this a little bit by pushing their kids. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I know you guys talk about this whole concept of trophy kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, parents wanting their kids to be the best. Maybe they're putting the pressure on them. Maybe kids are putting, you know, self-imposed pressure because they have beliefs about, you know, their performance, or they're looking, like you said, to things of the world instead of who they are intrinsically in Christ to get their self-esteem. So they got to wear all these masks, you know, that show the world that they have it all together.
Yeah. And it's the same thing. You know, it goes back, every single one of us through the teenage years it really goes back to the Erik Erikson theory, that it's a time of identity confusion versus finding your identity.
Yes.
Right. And so it's very self-focused. It's very inward-focused in who I'm becoming. But as teenagers ask, who am I becoming? They're also asking, how am I doing? And I think that's the core question that today's teenagers are asking themselves. And they're not asking this out loud. It's not explicit. It's not conscious. But implicitly, inside, intrinsically, they're asking, how am I doing? And they're getting the answers from the adults around them. And I think what's happened through the years is we've seen a generation of parents who grew up with not very much at all. And now what's happened is they're raising their kids in a culture, and in, we are the most prosperous nation at the most prosperous time in history. And so our kids are growing up with gadgets that their parents never even dreamed of having. And technology has grown so fast in the past, 15 years or so. Parents have poured into and pampered their children in a lot of ways, and these teenagers. And that's where you hear the helicopter generation. You have helicopter parents who are pampering them. And I mean, when I'm in the middle between the Gen X and the millennial. But when I was in school, I was a wrestler, and you had to wrestle for your spot on the team. Whereas today, what we've done is we've given trophies to everybody, and we've given everybody a chance. And so in this mentality, what it's done for our younger generation is it's given them this mentality that they are awesome, that and so that we've answered that how am I doing question by giving them a trophy. You're doing great as long as you try hard. Mm. What's happening, though, is that's translating into the real world, where the unemployment rate for kids in college and coming out of college is above 13% and higher in some areas. And they're also getting into colleges where they're realizing they're not getting A's just because they're trying hard. And so now you have a disenfranchised generation who's mad at authority or who's mad at society because you're not giving me my worth because I am somebody. I'm doing well. At least I tried hard.
So I deserve it.
I deserve it. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, how are parents falling short here? What do they need to know about connecting with their kids on a heart level?
I think, one of the biggest things to do, and this is seeing them in light of the full gospel. And I use the word see there because I think we have to see them. And a lot of times what ends up happening, it's like the golden rule, treat others as you want to be treated. I always love to insert the word understand in the place of treat because in order to be understood, you first have to understand. And I think as parents and as influencers in the next generation, in order for them to understand us, and for us to have influence and to speak into their lives and for them to trust us, we've got to first understand where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, if you think about the full gospel, where you have creation, and then you have the fall of mankind, you have redemption, and then you have the consummation when Jesus comes back. A lot of times what we do is we will see our kids in one of two lights. We either see them in light of creation, where we see them as a gift of God to be treasured, God created them, and that's true. But we only see them in that light. And that's where the trophy child issue comes in. That's where we give them a trophy, because they're a gift from God, and so we pamper them, and we only see them in that light. Or we see them only in light of the fall, where we see them as complete sinners. They're bad kids. They listen to their music too loud. It's just the constant complaint of older generation, of younger generation. They're bad. Mm-hmm. They're sinners. And we only see them in that light.
And so all of that's giving them messages about who they are. See, they're answering these questions. Who am I? Am I loved? Am I valued? Kind of going back to, your attachment stuff. Is my attachment figure sufficiently near, responsive, and emotionally attuned to me? And then that's how I develop those core beliefs.
I develop my core beliefs based upon how that question is being answered. Mm-hmm. How am I doing? And am I loved? And are other people safe? And when we see our kids and we see our teenagers only either in light of the fall or either in light of creation, we are sending them a message. Whereas if we effectively lead our kids to Christ, when they come to know Christ, they become a new creation and they become heirs just like we are, adopted sons and daughters, and they become brothers and sisters to us in Christ. And so our goal then is to help them, and there's a big gap there in terms of how to do that, but just the mindset of seeing them in light of the gospel, where you are now their primary discipler. It's helping them, preparing them for the coming of Christ. And I think that if we can start to see them in light of that full gospel rather than just parts of the gospel, I think it changes the way we treat them and the way we see them.
Mm. Okay, so who are they? Give us an age range for people that may be saying, what is millennials? What does that mean?
The millennial it varies depending on who you ask. Generally speaking, today's millennials are anywhere between the ages of 18 and 32 years old-ish, born around 1980, 1979. And then you also have the teenagers of today, which Tim Elmore describes as Generation IY, or others call them Generation C, the connected generation. And so you have a generation here that has grown up as digital natives.
Yes.
And they've been defined by events such as 9/11. They've also been defined by the war on terror and those types of things. And so they also see a lot of opportunity. They're very optimistic generation as well.
And they've also been defined by social media. How they do relationships, how they connect is hugely different from, say, how, my generation connected.
And I think, back to your question of how can we get parents to help, I think that's another important factor is being social media savvy, loving the web, getting to know what your teenagers, what your children are doing, where, understanding Facebook, creating your own Facebook account, creating a Twitter account, and getting to know, getting in that world, not so that you can be a, hovering over them, but so that you can learn to relate to them in that world as well as, because that world leads, it really is a both and, it leads to the face-to-face stuff.
Okay, so that's what I wanted to ask you. How on a practical level do we bridge the gap and connect and build relational, emotional, and spiritual health with our kids?
Yeah, and I think the primary, and this goes back to the attachment relationship, the primary thing that we have to do, and here's another F, is being safe. We have to be someone that our teenagers and our children can trust. And that really starts by being safe. And there's probably a lot of parents that are going, man, I don't feel like I'm safe. I haven't been safe before. There's such a rift in our relationship right now that I don't even trust my own son or daughter. They're not safe. And what I would say, the reality right there goes back to that understanding, is just learn to understand where they're coming from. Become their biggest fan. And I think that's really what the next generation needs. We all need this. We all seek glory, and that's really the whole of the gospel is it's either about me and seeking my own glory or it's about seeking the glory of the Lord. Mm-hmm. And when we come to know Jesus, it all, our weight and our importance, which is what that word glory refers to in the Greek, is our importance. We want to know that we're important.
We want to be known. We that's our greatest desire, is to be fully known.
And absolutely.
We're known in context of relationship with one another and then, known by the heart of God. I think that's what makes us feel most fully alive.
And I'll give you an example here. I know of a young girl, 11 years old, who started having eraser marks all over her arms, and which is the precursor to cutting.
Mm-hmm.
And a loved one, a relative, had seen this, didn't know what to do about it. Well, in going to church, one of the youth leader or the leader there of the ministry approached this relative and said, "Hey, listen, here's what's going on. I'm noticing marks on this girl's arms." And he, as a school teacher, realized and knew what it was, went to the girl, 11 years old, and asked her about them. and just said, what's going on? Why are they there? And it has stopped since. This girl has no more marks on her body. And the reality was, getting to know the story, getting to know the situation, all this girl was looking for was for somebody to notice.
Yeah. I see it all the time. Yeah.
And nobody else had cared. Nobody else had said anything. It's just understanding and fully knowing our children and it's being safe in their lives. We are safe by understanding them without judging them.
Yeah, that's the key. So let me ask you this. Parents, when they face things like this with their kids, because I see a lot of this, the first thing we want to do as parents is like, oh, well, what did I do wrong? Where did I mess up? What is this going to look like if everybody else sees that my kid is doing this? Because, you know, I work the formula, in the Christian formula, A plus B equals C, and now the formula's not working because my kid's got an eating disorder or my kid's cutting or my kid's, you know, smoking pot. And so parents start freaking out about that, and they get so tangled up into their own stuff that sometimes how they communicate to their kids is problematic.
Yeah.
So what do they need to do in situations like that? You know, I mean, they need to notice their own stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a great question, because a lot of times what happens is I have parents who come to me and say, you know, my son or daughter is addicted to pornography, or my son or daughter is addicted to marijuana or smoking marijuana. What do I do? And it's like, well, you need to help. You're the expert. And this isn't about me. And the reality is it's all about you.
Yeah.
And meeting with them is the primary thing that I do, because there's a systemic issue taking place. And I think, you know, what do parents do? I think the first thing to do is just to take a step back and to be able to say, you know, it's really about humbling ourselves and realizing, listen, this isn't going to happen overnight. This isn't going to, it didn't get broken overnight. And it's not going to get fixed overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think being realistic in that. Prior to that, though, I think really is understanding God's grace in all of it and God's mercy in all of it. And, you know, we are all broken vessels. We are all broken individuals. And it's God's grace and mercy that leads us back to Him. And it's God's grace and mercy that reconciles us back to our children. And so I think that's where we begin, is helping parents to see, listen, the model for doing this is going back to Christ and seeking Christ, because that's where the humility is going to come in. But then helping them learn that they don't need to be on the defensive, that in order to have intimacy with their children, they've got to endure negative feelings, and there's going to be negative feelings.
Yeah.
But they're going to stop blaming. They have to choose to stop blaming their children, and they also have to choose to stop blaming themselves. Because if you're blaming all the time, what you're doing is you're not taking responsibility for the issue at hand. And so if we can give up blame of our teenagers, and we can give up blame of ourselves, because blaming ourselves is saying that Christ's death on the cross wasn't good enough for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got to accept His grace, accept that forgiveness. And then once we do that, then we can take the steps. We can do the how-tos. But I think at the very beginning, there's got to be that want and that willingness to say, you know what, I'm going to change the only person I can, and that's me.
Bingo.
I can't change my teenager.
Yeah.
But I can change me.
Yeah, and I think kids, oftentimes I'll ask them, you know, do you know your parents love you? Oh yeah, I know my parents love me. Do you know your parents accept you? No, I don't think they accept me unconditionally. And that's where parents really need to come in, and in spite of whatever the kid's doing, they need to listen with the intent to understand their kid's heart. And whatever issues they have that sprung off the behavior, they need to deal with those personally with the Lord and not get that tangled up into whatever their kids are doing. And I think that's hard for folks, because we do feel that. We feel responsible as parents, you know, and that's okay. But we need to deal with that, I think, with God, and not bring that into our relationship with our kids. Because then, you know, we're putting them back on a performance treadmill. Well, I'll love you if you perform perfectly. And that's a lot of what I'm seeing with these teens.
Well, and that's where what you're saying, loving versus accepting,
mm-hmm.
Basically, in a lot of ways, we've confused the word love in our culture. And love has become about buying gifts,
mm-hmm.
or you know, I'll buy your love, that kind of thing, as opposed to love really being about accepting and affirming and really validating who our children are.
Apart from their performance.
Apart from their performance and apart from buying them things. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that the whole acceptance piece, and you know, when we get stuck on that other side of the track about blaming, whether it's ourselves or our kids, we're really fighting the wrong battle, don't you think? I mean, we really have to be more in tune to the relationship and that piece, and really listening to understand our children's heart, like you said, rather than getting all tangled up in all this, because it really, we need to do that work. I'm not saying that we don't, but we need to do that work again, apart from, you know, the relationship with our kids, because our
absolutely.
Kids, yeah.
And I want to go back to, because just to repeat kind of what we're saying, seeing our kids, first of all, in our teenagers and the next generation in light of the full gospel, being safe in their lives, being socially media savvy, if you will. But going back to that whole idea of seeing them in light of the full gospel, I think we have to see ourselves as well in that light. And in First Peter, it talks about we are aliens and strangers in this world, and therefore we are not dealing with the things of this world. We are citizens of heaven, and everything that we're dealing with in this world, I should say, is a battle. It's a battle for our souls.
And for our hearts.
And for our hearts. And mm-hmm. because we're not of this world, we need to see all of the struggles and all of the battles really as a spiritual battle. And so Satan would love for nothing more than for you to have a broken relationship with your children, because what it's going to do is it's going to limit the impact God can have on your family.
Yeah.
And so for us to see the spiritual battle, I think bathing all of this in prayer is one of the most vital things that we can do.
Josh, we're out of time. This was great. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy life to talk to us about all this today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at ritaschulte.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.